All right, so we're back. Yes, it's still, you have two podcasts for the price of one on this Wednesday, February 9th. Welcome back to the Athletic Support. Second part of our episode will be dedicated to the new Montreal Canadiens head coach, interim head coach, Martin Saint-Louis. Arpin, first reaction? First reaction, I must tell you that we're here because you asked our listeners to see if they wanted us to split that podcast in two. Well, what were the results?
I asked people on Twitter, you know, I left the poll open for 20 minutes. 520 people responded asking if they wanted to hear our initial conversation on why the Canadiens should make a coaching change that was interrupted by the Canadiens actually making a coaching change. 86% said yes, of course, and 14% said no, that would be stupid. So that podcast is out. That's, I guess, kind of part one of this podcast in the sense that we did go over a lot of the reasons why we thought Ducharme needed to be fired, as he has been by the Montreal Canadiens, in case you haven't listened to part one and you've been sort of living under the rock for most of the day. Dominique Ducharme is out. Martin Saint-Louis, Hockey Hall of Famer from nearby Laval, Quebec, but living currently in Connecticut, is the new head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. Interim head coach. It's very important. I think this is one thing that people reacting to this news are not putting enough weight on, the word interim. The fact that he's an interim coach is the only reason this makes any sense, because Martin Saint-Louis has no coaching experience at any professional level. He coaches his kids in Pee-wee right now, if I'm not mistaken. Is it Pee-wee?
Actually,
it's a Pee-wee team.
There's his well, he's got three sons, right? So the second one, he coaches him at the prep school, Lucas. He coaches at prep school. And the youngest one, too, he coaches both of them. Mason, that would be minor bantam. So
right. And obviously his eldest son, Ryan, plays at Northeastern with Ken Hughes' two sons,
Riley and Jack.
And Jack. Yes. Yeah. So, but anyhow, just to say that everything, this entire discussion on Martin Saint-Louis being hired is completely 100% predicated on the word interim. Interim because it's not as if the Canadiens had tons of options of people to hire as an interim coach. There are people who have, I mean, even if you look at someone, let's take the example of someone like Guy Boucher, for instance. Let's just as a hypothetical, he's working at RDS, has a job. Maybe he would have taken a job, maybe not, who knows, but it's really takes a very kind of unique candidate to take a job that they know has a definite finish line, like a few months from now. Like, there's not many people who would leave what they're doing to do that.
No.
Which is why Martin Saint-Louis is a win-win in a way. It's win-win-win, in my opinion. It's a win because can he really do much worse than Dominique Ducharme's been doing over the last little while? Can the Canadiens be much worse than they've been? If Martin Saint-Louis works out, well, then great. The Canadiens have found themselves a really outside-the-box, kind of Rod Brindamore-esque coach, even though Rod Brindamore was an assistant coach for a while before taking over the head job. So that comparison doesn't really apply. And it's a win for Martin Saint-Louis to see if he actually likes the job. So there's a lot of reasons to like it, but it all comes down to the word interim. That's really the most important part of today's announcement by the Canadiens.
Yeah. So when I spoke to Martin, that was, on just following the announcement that Kent Hughes was the new GM, they have a long history together, Hughes and him. Kent Hughes was his coach when Saint-Louis was going to a hockey school, the Northern Elite, that was in Vermont. Back then, Kent Hughes was about 20 years old. He was going to Middlebury College. And so he coached Martin Saint-Louis. So that's how their relationship started. Obviously, after that, Martin Saint-Louis was very close with Vincent Lecavalier. And throughout Vincent's career, Kent Hughes was his agent. And lately, as you mentioned, both men had their sons playing at Northeastern. So, when I reached out to Martin Saint-Louis to discuss Kent Hughes, you know, we brought up, we discussed the fact that he was coaching his sons, and he's, and clearly, St. Louis was not in any rush. I know that he expressed the, his interest in coming back in the NHL and be a head coach one day. But he didn't seem in any rush to do that now. Explaining to me that, that what he was living with his sons now, those were moments that he would not be able to, you know, to get again or later on in life. So, so I think that that's where the opportunity that he gets now with the Montreal Canadiens is interesting, not only on the Canadian side to see if they're able, pardon the pun, but to see if they can catch lightning in a bottle, but with a nomination such as this one, so that is so outside the box, but also for St. Louis to say, okay, am I ready for this? And is it something, you know, will I be comfortable dealing with the media on a daily basis? Am I, do I connect with the group there? Is it the proper environment for me to experience my, my first, you know, head coaching job in the NHL? And I was thinking, you know, it, it reminds me of Jacques Lemaire when he coached the Canadiens in the 80s. He thought, he realized pretty quickly that everything, the whole environment in Montreal was not for him. He stepped down and he went to coach somewhere else. I think that Martin St-Louis can, is in an environment now where he's able to test that and figure out if this is something that's for him or not. Another comparison I could make also, although it's not exactly the same, is with Dale Hunter, who was asked to leave the London Knights and become an NHL head coach with the Washington Capitals mid-season. Obviously, back then, when they fired Bruce Boudreau, the team was in shambles, but they were salvageable, so much so that Hunter brought the Capitals to the playoffs, which is not something that Martin St-Louis will be able to do with these Canadiens. But I'm curious to see what sort of impact he's going to have, just in terms of A, credibility of being such an imposing figure. Two, he's an alpha male. You know, all the guys that have dealt with him, all the former players that were in the gym with him or shared the same locker room, he's really an imposing presence despite his small stature. And I think that that might go a long way in earning that head coaching job credibility. Even though he doesn't have it on his resume, I think that his persona might go a long way, and he's going to I expect to see this team start skating a lot more intensively from this point on.
Yeah, and from that perspective, I mean, there's really nothing for anyone to lose. I mean, that's kind of what I take from it, because again, the initial reaction can be that this is comical. And frankly, I don't blame people for looking at this and being like, wow, the Canadiens just hired someone with no coaching experience to be their head coach, which under normal
circumstances... This is not Mario Tremblay, though.
No, that's it. That's, under normal circumstances, that would make no sense. Exactly. And actually, Mario Tremblay is a reason why it's smart for the Canadiens not to commit to anyone long-term right now, because... Yeah. They should only do that when they have the full field of candidates available to them, which they do not have right now. That's obvious. So it's the Canadiens have nothing to lose, because the Canadiens on the ice had become a punchline. I mean, it's really, you know, the last five games were just not, they were completely unacceptable. And it's one thing to tank, which the Canadiens are clearly fine with. It's another thing to just be consistently humiliated and have your players' self-confidence just blown to bits. You know, I think Josh Anderson, after the game against the Devils, talking the way he did, talking about how embarrassed he was, it's not good. And so the alpha male quality of Martin St-Louis, I think, will probably be something that's needed for these guys. And he does bring a certain gravitas to him that Dominique Ducharme didn't, even though I still believe Dominique Ducharme to be a really smart hockey guy, and I really feel bad for his less than calendar year at the helm of the Canadiens, even though he got to go to a Stanley Cup final, was really just had the worst set of circumstances I think I've ever seen a head coach thrown into. Yeah. Like, I mean, honestly, like he was really not given a chance to succeed properly. But so in that sense, the Canadians have nothing to lose, because I don't think it's possible. It would be possible for Martin St. Louis to do worse than how the Canadians are playing right now. And you know, they could possibly, maybe they found a real coaching talent here. Maybe Martin St. Louis will believe. And so from Martin St. Louis' perspective, even if he doesn't become the full-time coach of the Canadiens, if he's able to make this team play moderately better, like just a little better, then already he's proven something that maybe one day down the road, if he doesn't become the full-time coach here, he can point to future employers, potential employers, and say, well, look at what I did in Montreal, and look at that tire fire I took over, and I at least made it respectable. You know, like I at least made it, there was some improvement there. So, you know, really a great opportunity. Like, and I think, you know, he's been open saying that he does want to get back into professional hockey at some point. So that's really his opportunity here, is just to, even if it doesn't work out long-term as of now, which frankly, I'd be surprised if it did. You know, I really would be surprised if Martin St. Louis was the coach of the Montreal Canadiens at training camp next fall. Like that would surprise me somewhat. And if that's the case, and if he's not, and the Canadiens start playing honest, just respectable hockey, then he too kind of adds a little feather in his cap and is able to point to that when he goes for, let's say, an assistant's job down the road or something, or start or embarks on a more normal path to an NHL head coaching position than the one he's on right now, which is anything but normal, obviously.
Yeah, I know. Going from prep school with only, you know, in terms of coaching in the NHL, is only experience was that he was briefly a team consultant with the Columbus Blue Jackets, where he became their power play specialist. That was in the 2018-19 season. Yeah.
Yeah. Josh Anderson was there at the time.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Why do I feel like this is someone we're going to talk to again in very short order? I don't know. Yes. But, you know, we were talking in the previous podcast, we were wondering about, you know, the availability of other guys, other assistant coaches. So obviously I asked around in between our two episodes, and I was told that it would have been tough for the Canadiens to get permission to approach either a guy like Alain Nasreddin or Pascal Vincent or any other assistant coach. I don't know to which extent that applies to Benoit Groulx as an AHL head coach, but I was told that it would have been tough to get permission 45 days before the trade deadline to just snatch an assistant coach from a team and bring it on board with yours. So that limited the pool. And under the current circumstances of the people that were available, well, why not go with someone that enables you to widen the pool of possible candidates? You know, it might work, it might not work, and I won't go in any great lengths with that, because I think that you proved the point already. But the worst that can happen is that it's going to be status quo. The Canadians are still, in my view, very likely to end up in the bottom three spots of the NHL, which would have a certain amount of impact when it comes to the draft. But these guys are better players. You were mentioning earlier the talent level, which was comparable to the New Jersey Devils. The talent level on this team is not bad, but it was not allowed to express itself. And I think this is something that we're going to see probably changing with Martin St. Louis.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, you would think so. And it's just, I've always been really intrigued by great players becoming coaches. In any sport, you know, but in hockey in particular, and you know, obviously you think of Wayne Gretzky as a coach in Arizona, and you know, Rod Brindamore's a borderline Hall of Fame player. I think there's many people who could make a very strong argument that he belongs in the Hall of Fame as a player, has obviously turned into an excellent coach. You know, there are examples of great players becoming great coaches, but generally speaking, the players who become great coaches are kind of the fringe guys, are the role players, the ones who needed to think the game better than everyone else to find any advantage they could in order to kind of scrap out an NHL career. Those are generally the types of players that become successful NHL coaches. And I think that applies in any sport, really, is the notion that, you know, maybe a great player would have more difficulty explaining the process to a player who's not as great as he was, because that process came to them so easily, and they never really had to think about it. They worked on instinct often, and they worked on talent, obviously having way more talent than everyone else, which is where I think Martin Saint-Louis is different. Obviously a supremely talented player, but a player who got to the NHL through will, and then once he got to the NHL, succeeded in the NHL through will. And it's different in this case, I think, than most of the other times I've thought about it, because I do think that there's a disconnect there between most great players in any sport and coaching players who are lesser players than they were when they played, and being able to explain to those players how to get past their deficiencies, because they themselves didn't have those deficiencies when they played. Martin Saint-Louis is unique in that respect, in the sense that, yes, he's a Hall of Fame player. Yes, he's an all-time great Hart Trophy winner, Art Ross Trophy winner, Stanley Cup champion, all the accolades that he has earned, 100%. He's in a unique position to communicate that, those things to players who are not ever going to be as great as Martin Saint-Louis was, because he had to go through a much more arduous process than most Hall of Fame players ever did. Undrafted, obviously, you know, changing teams, traded, looking for, begging for someone to take him at a training camp. The Canadians turning him down when he kind of reached out to see if he could be invited to their training camp. And then ultimately landing in Tampa Bay and willing himself to greatness. There are a lot of lessons that someone like that could teach this club right now, because right now they're willing themselves down. You know, they're not willing themselves up. They're willing themselves down. And I think having an infusion of someone who willed himself up his entire career could maybe do this team some good.
But in terms of the coaching aspect, one thing that, you know, listening to you popped in my mind is that many years ago, that was 2014, the Canadians played against the New York Rangers. That's in 2014. And I wrote a story for La Presse about the eyes of Martin Saint-Louis, because you know how Martin Saint-Louis got big eyes? Almost a little bit. That's the closest thing that comes to the Rockets' Rocky Richard eyes. Yeah.
Yes.
So, and those are eyes that get very big when something happens, and when he gets angry, you know? And, you know, with Hulk, you would say, you don't like me when I'm angry. Well, you can tell with Martin Saint-Louis, because his eyes get very big. But so I developed that angle of the eyes with his teammates, with his dad, and also with his head coach back then, Alain Vigneault. And he says, well, there's not just the eyes of, you know, the guy that has a vision on the ice, but there's also how he sees the game literally. And back then, Alain Vigneault had told me, he says, it's funny you should say that, because he always got this way of saying, of discussing with him and saying, I'd like you to see things through my eyes, because he has a way of seeing hockey in a very particular situation. He wants to have all the information. He wants to know everything about hockey. And that led to very, very lively discussions between the head coach and the star player. So in that sense, it's not just a guy that's a supremely talented player and says, well, why don't you do it this way? And tries to explain a gift that his players have that don't have that and that he had. In his case, it's because he's got this whole vision of how hockey should be played, and it has led to many discussions. And it's funny because I went for that story on Kent Hughes. I went to look at pictures, trying, well, okay, are there pictures of Martin Saint-Louis with Kent Hughes or with Vincent Lecavalier? And the number of pictures that I bumped into of Martin Saint-Louis, who's discussing with his teammates on the ice, always pointing to something, exchanging, etc. And that's that there's a level of involvement there in the strategy that I think bodes well. I don't think that, even though it looks as though he's got zero NHL experience in coaching, it doesn't seem to me like this is a guy that starts from scratch.
No, I think that's fair. I think a lot of his old Tampa Bay Lightning teammates would agree with you. He was seen in Tampa Bay as kind of a pseudo assistant coach. That's how involved he was, you know, discussing strategy, discussing tactics, discussing situations with his teammates. I would agree with that. I just think it's going to be just a fascinating experiment to see how this is going to work. It's refreshing in a way. You know, we let off the last podcast, the pre Ducharme firing podcast earlier today, reading a comment from a reader, Ethan, on my story from after the Devils game, saying, oh, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you're following this team. I got to tell you, as a journalist and as a writer, I'm fascinated to see what kind of changes Martin Saint-Louis is going to implement and how quickly he will do so, and what they will be. I mean, I'm fascinated to see what happens to Cole Caulfield and how he's going to be used, what players he's going to be playing with, how the power play is going to look, and really the impact that Martin Saint-Louis can have on Cole Caulfield. If for no other reason, if for nothing else, exposing Cole Caulfield to Martin Saint-Louis and really all of their young players. It's not just the smaller guys that can learn from Martin Saint-Louis. That's kind of a misnomer. But really, specifically Cole Caulfield and how you can survive in the NHL as a smaller player. I remember Brendan Gallagher talking to me about how much it meant to him to have a locker next to Brian Gionta for the first few years of his career. Because Gionta, between periods, between games, would constantly be giving Gallagher advice on how to get to those areas of the ice, how to survive at that size, and not only survive, but use that size to your advantage. And Gallagher credits a lot of his NHL success to those years playing with Brian Gionta and sitting next to him in the dressing room and getting that advice. Cole Caulfield doesn't really have that in the sense that, you know, Paul Byron's a smaller guy, but not really a big goal scorer, not really the same style of player as Cole Caulfield is. And Martin Saint-Louis wasn't either necessarily, but he scored goals and he produced offense. And that's what Cole Caulfield, that's his identity as a player. So having someone like Martin Saint-Louis, who overcame so much to prove that he could play in the NHL at his size, and then not only made the NHL, but had a Hall of Fame career playing at his size, can only benefit Cole Caulfield. But the Canadiens are playing Thursday night. They're going to have Martin Saint-Louis behind the bench. I'm just going to be watching what's going on with Cole Caulfield. That's really what's going to be like, if for no other reason, if nothing else changes and the Canadiens continue playing as horribly as they do, as they have, exposing Cole Caulfield to Martin Saint-Louis for a few months, not the worst idea in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
No, but this, if Martin Saint-Louis turn things around, it's going to be significant. It's going to be a significant case against Dominique Ducharme, in the sense that someone else came in with the same group of players and was able to do much more than you were able to do. It would be quite the indictment if there was a 180 degree shift from that group.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I'd like to talk about Dominique Ducharme a little bit. We talked about, obviously, how poorly the Canadiens were playing earlier, but he wasn't fired at the time. Now he has been fired, and so I think taking a more global view of Dominique Ducharme would be worthwhile.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to say that I enjoyed talking to Dominique Ducharme. I even though we did it almost entirely through Zoom throughout his entire, you know, not quite 12 months as coach of the Montreal Canadiens. But what I did appreciate was that, especially in better times, of late it was worse. But, you know, he always gave a thoughtful response to your question. He actually thought about it, literally thoughtful response. Was very transparent with a lot of his decisions, understood that his decisions were going to be questioned by the media, did not take it personally. And I thought he had some interesting ideas as far as, like, watching his practices after he took over for Claude last year. Didn't watch the initial ones because we weren't on the road at that time, but when they came back to Montreal and he had, you know, morning skates were teaching practices. Every practice was detailed down to Dominique Ducharme actually skating the routes that he wanted his players to take, and he would skate them himself. Really kind of overhauling the way the Canadiens play in a really short period of time, and with so many games crammed in with very little practice time. I grew to respect Dominique Ducharme as a hockey coach. This was obviously, you know, the way things have gone this season and the way things have been going of late particularly made this inevitable. But I had an appreciation for Dominique Ducharme as a hockey coach. I don't know to what extent his players did. I don't get the sense that they were 100% unanimous in that regard. No. But as a reporter, I like dealing with the guy, and I wish him well, and I hope this isn't the end of the line for Dominique Ducharme, though I agree with you. If Martin St-Louis is able to turn this around to any extent, like even a little tiny bit, if they start winning, you know, instead of winning one every five games, if they start winning one every four games, it's not going to look good on Dominique Ducharme.
No, because I haven't checked, but on top of my head, I would suspect that he's ending up with the worst record of any head coach of the Montreal Canadiens in history. But it's unfortunate because, and I don't know to which extent this is on Marc Bergevin and to which extent this is on Dominique Ducharme, but there is, you know, that playoff push last year was so highly improbable that I think that some people on this organization were caught up in thinking that this would be the new norm, that the anomaly was actually how things would be from this point on. And I think that the part where Ducharme might be a bit guilty of that is that, you know, ever since throughout the season, the players and Ducharme himself said, you know, whenever we would ask about his system, well, everybody would shrug it off and say, well, it hasn't changed a whole lot. I mean, we're making tweaks here and there, and this, uh-huh. it's been, you know, tweaks has been a key word for him, because every time he's been asking about maybe making changes to reflect the personnel that he's got at his disposal and to address the fact that certain things that he's tried to implement did not work. He always said, well, we keep tweaking, but ultimately it's a matter of execution. So I wonder if the results of the playoffs legitimized his way of doing things, saying, okay, I know that this worked. I'm going to stick to what I believe in and stick to what I saw work in a short period of time, and ultimately it did not work. So probably because what happened in the playoffs last year was more a smokescreen than anything else.
See, I've been hearing that a lot, the whole smokescreen of the playoffs, and yes,
it clearly was. Understand me well. I'm not delegitimizing what they did, but the sense is, okay, there are factors that could hardly be reproduced in the sense that, you know, coming back from that 1-3 deficit against Toronto, Carey Price with that such a level of play, and on this podcast, we discussed the fact that their blue line, their strategy for the blue line was predicated on the playoffs, after a full year of them struggling to get any result on their back end with their big, mean blue line. So it worked in the playoffs, but there were telling signs that during the regular season, it would be another story. So the results that they got, it's not a smokescreen in the sense that it did not really happen or they did not deserve it. They get full credit for it. What I'm saying is that did they get conclusions out of this that were not necessarily founded over what could be success over a longer term?
Yeah, that's fair. And I think there were some things that were kind of out of their control as well. I mean, it struck me today, speaking to Luke Richardson, actually, how he was talking about just how vital to their entire defensive system quickly killing plays is. Yeah. When you take out Joel Edmondson and Shea Weber from a D-core and replace it with Chris Weidman and David Savard, who kind of, you know, who got better as time went on. But, you know, they're really losing a lot of that, you know, like they lost a lot of that. Dominic Ducharme has mentioned the term killing plays over and over and over again. And I will say, fortunately for Dominic Ducharme, from a pure winning percentage standpoint,
yeah,
finishes his Canadiens regular season career with a record of 23-46-14. That is a winning percentage of .277 in 83 games. In 1939-40, a gentleman by the name of Alfred Lapine coached 48 games for the Montreal Canadiens and went 10-33-5. He had a .260 winning percentage. So it looks like Dominic Ducharme has avoided having the worst winning percentage, at least regular season winning percentage, in NHL in Montreal Canadiens coaching history.
Yeah,
Pit Lepin, the immortal great from that season, 1939-40, takes that one. So Dominic Ducharme can rest easy. He's sitting at .277, but still, it's quite the. You know, if this is it for Dominic Ducharme, like imagine having a .277 regular season winning percentage and also having a Stanley Cup final on a resume that lasts 83 regular season games. So basically one full regular season, one game more than one full regular season. Dominic Ducharme had a .277 winning percentage and went to the Stanley Cup final. It's quite astonishing. I mean, really, it's, I mean, you think back, like, he was hired on February 24th, goes through that hellish schedule, squeaks into the playoffs. Basically, remember that series they had in Calgary? When if Calgary had kind of swept that series during the regular season, if Calgary had swept that series, then Calgary would have been in a playoff spot, you know, and Montreal kind of got it together. And that's actually when Jonathan Drouin left the team and sort of I think that was that. Yeah, it was that in Calgary. But they were that close to, like, if they were on such a bad run that if Calgary had taken full advantage of that situation and swept it, Montreal might have just missed the playoffs. And Dominic Ducharme would not have gotten a 3-year contract extension and probably wouldn't even be coaching the Canadiens this season. But it's just a remarkable calendar year for this man, who spent his entire life trying to prepare for this job, this moment, this job right now. And he cared deeply about it. Like, this is, you know, but I think much like his players, frankly, I mean, you heard Chris Weidman talking about it today, how some of the guys care too much and that leads them to make errors. I think this season we saw how Dominic Ducharme caring too much led to serious errors in judgment. Like, it just, like, he just really... Some of the decisions were just baffling and really hard to justify. And I think his judgment was somewhat clouded by how desperate he was to turn things around. But .277 winning percentage, 83 games, Stanley Cup finalist.
Yeah, I imagine another
pretty
universe
unique
where,
run.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine him like 15 years from now interviewing for a job, sending his resume, and someone who would have no idea of how the NHL works would look at that and say, .277 Stanley Cup final. What happened here?
What exactly is this all about?
What is this? What went on over here?
Yeah, it looks like you coached one NHL season, had a .277 winning percentage, and made the Stanley Cup final. Like, forget making the playoffs. Like, how did you make the playoffs that year? And then went on to make the Stanley Cup final. So
that shows how the pandemic has completely skewed everything regarding the Canadians, both good and bad, over the last two seasons. It's been pretty ridiculous. So, but yeah.
Dominique Ducharme just became a huge Pit LePin fan. He's probably going to get a jersey with LePin on the back now. He's very happy that Pit LePin was once the coach of the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, I wish him well too. I mean, he's a good man, and he's a good hockey mind. And you know, let's just hope that this, in many years from now, when if he gets that second opportunity, and I hope that he will, you know, he will take the lessons from what happened this first time around, and that the circumstances will be more manageable than this first time. So we'll see. So okay, the Martin Saint-Louis era is dawning.
Yeah,
and it's beginnings. That's fun. It's not something that I foresaw, but the idea of Martin Saint-Louis being with the Montreal Canadiens organization, there's something nice to it, and I think that there's some good things that can come out of this. And let's not be too weary and call it a mistake just yet.
Hey man, Jeff Gorton, day one, he took the job. He said he wanted outside the box ideas. This is a pretty outside the box idea, you know. I mean, this is really, and I agree. We're quick to judge everything and
everything.
Again, just to reiterate, this does look goofy. It does. There's no hiding that this looks like a goofy decision. But I just don't see the downside of it. Like, I just don't see any reason why not to try something goofy at this point, because the situation is what it is. And to me, and I felt this from the get-go, is that when the minute they hired Jeff Gorton, all of this was gravy for whoever the new management was going to be, you know, led by Jeff Gorton. Then when Ken Hughes comes on, we see just how much intel that they can gather over the course of a season. Well, to me, I think this is just more intel. Like, it's really, maybe they found someone who is going to have a fire lit inside himself by this challenge of coaching this team at this time. And maybe they found a potential long-term head coach, even though I don't think it's very likely. Maybe they did. And if not, what have they lost? You know, there's really nothing. There's really also, no downside.
And also, how do their players react to a radically different voice? You know, it's an entirely different sort of person that's going to address them tomorrow morning. So how do these players react with a certain style, you know, so that, will they be more receptive to that? Or so, yeah, the Canadians will learn, about Martin Saint-Louis, but they will learn even more, or just as much, about their own players under a different set of circumstances. And as I pointed out in the first portion of our pod, I think that there's a good opportunity here for some players to amp up their value, their trade value, and maybe turn their season around. And that could be helpful for both for the players themselves and for the organization.
Yeah, they can use some of that Martin Saint-Louis fire in his eyes that you wrote about for La Presse all those years ago. The real question, just in closing, is who is the next UVM catamount to coach the Canadiens? Because I think this is going to start a trend where the Canadiens are just going to find all their coaches off players who used to play for the UVM catamounts. So let's start looking at their past rosters. Maybe Éric Perrin could come in and be the next coach. It's quite something to have two people who were teammates in college, you know, more than 20 – almost 30 years ago, actually, at this point, I think, or more than 20 years ago, succeed one another as head coaches of the Montreal Canadiens all the time later. But anyhow, it's good luck to Martin Saint-Louis. I'm eager to see, like, honestly, and as I mentioned, I'm eager to document his time as an NHL head coach, no matter how it goes. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
And you know what? Before we wrap this up, there's a tiny little tidbit here. It's yet another tie, another connection that Jordan Harris can make with the Montreal Canadiens. You know, if he was really hesitating on signing with the Montreal Canadiens, and that things did not maybe did not sit the best with previous management, and the communication, you know, was not always good. When Marc Bergevin, who knows, I remember Bergevin saying, well, if he wants to sign with New York or Boston, there's not much I can do about it. Well, now you've got Jeff Gorton, who's a Boston guy. You got Kent Hughes, who's been circling around Northeastern University. Now you've got Martin Saint-Louis, another person,
right?
Kent Hughes.
Coached Jordan.
All of a sudden, you know, and plus all sorts of ties, with funny ties this season. I mean, the goalie coach is Mike Condon, for God's sakes. You know,
yes.
There's all sorts of stuff that connects Montreal and Northeastern right now. So who knows? Maybe that's yet another, little argument to bring Jordan Harris in the fall. And that could happen. If it has to happen, it's going to happen earlier rather than later, because, you know, after the trade deadline and towards the end of the season, once Northeastern is done with their season, who knows, we might see Harris signing with Montreal and maybe playing a game or two. That remains to be seen.
I think he can play more than a game or two. I mean, the regular season this year ends. The NHL regular season ends much later than normal. So in a normal year, it would be a game or two. But you know, this year,
it gives more runway this year.
There's a lot more runway, and I'm just looking at the Northeastern schedule, because you kind of sprung this on me late. And their last regular season game is scheduled for March 5th. So that's in less than a month. Obviously, there's the postseason after that, and the NCAA tournament. But you know, depending on how the Northeastern does, we could see Jordan Harris here in like 6 weeks. Like right around the trade deadline, where he would have an opportunity to play a lot of games. And I don't know how they're going to find room for him on their defense, though, because they're really locked in with the guys that they have. it's going to be a tough decision. Cale Klag, Jordan Harris. Yeah. Oh, Chris Weidman's really been showing something. But yeah, that's obviously no offense to those.
Plus,
guys,
there's Sammy Niku
Sammy Niku and Laval, and he's put in so much time, and he really deserves a shot. But yeah, it's obviously Canes will have no trouble finding room for Jordan Harris if they're able to sign him. No. And that's actually an excellent point that I didn't think of, that Martin Saint-Louis is yet another reason why he might want to come here and sign and finish the season in the NHL, which is the Canes are the only team that can offer him that opportunity. So that is the one advantage they have. Is that they would allow him to burn a year of his entry-level contract and get some NHL games in this year if he so chooses. I mean, I know graduating is obviously very important to him, and I don't know if he would be into missing classes to play NHL hockey games.
No.
But I guess we'll see.
He's going to finish. He's going to graduate. He's close to the finish line. But yeah. There's room there for some games to be played with the Canadians if he chooses to. So I think that's something that remains to be seen and to be followed.
Okay, very interesting. So I would you know, now Marc-Antoine and I are going to sit down and digest all this and figure out what to write about it. But obviously on Thursday at 11:30, Martin Saint-Louis, Ken Hughes, and Jeff Gorton will be addressing the media. We're not quite sure what form that's going to take, if it's going to be a Death Star news conference at the Bell Center, like it was for Ken Hughes's intro, or if it'll be via Zoom. But be sure to tune in for that. And if you want to read anything that Marc-Antoine or I write on this whole thing, and you have not yet, for some reason, subscribed to The Athletic, I suggest you do so. And just so you know, that Athletic Sport listeners always, always, no matter what kind of promotion we have going on, you can always get a discounted rate on your first year subscription by going to theathletic.com/athletic support. That is theathletic.com/athletic support. And just a reminder, if you want to go on Apple Podcasts, shoot us a rating, give us a review. We've been seeing that ever since we started mentioning it on the podcast, that people are doing that. We really appreciate it. We read them. They really... I think in French would be the best term, but it's really nice to read the compliments that you guys leave us. And so if you do feel so inclined, but the main thing being that if you give the rating and you give it a review, the more ratings that get piled up, the more it gets distributed on the various podcast platforms, whether it's Apple or Spotify, and the more people can discover the podcast, which is really what just really what we're hoping for. So if you can go and do that, even if it's a bad review, you know, but just don't be quite as loud about it if it's a bad review. But if you want to give a bad review, go ahead. But please, if you could leave a review and rating on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, we would greatly appreciate it. And be on the lookout on The Athletic for our coverage of the debut of the Martin St. Louis era as head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. It's very weird to say that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk again next week for Le Sport Athletic. So everybody, have a nice rest of your day. Bye-bye.